Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates. Wikicuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. WCRS, changing the world you listen to.
What? What'd you do? You messed something up. What'd you do?
I hit the wrong thing.
What'd you hit?
Close issues.
Huh?
Coming to you live from the Wiki Curiosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I sincerely apologize for not only the wrong button being hit, but also the fact that you could hear everything that we were saying during the live because somebody didn't put us on mute.
I mean, we were in the green room for most of it.
No. No.
Yeah, we were in the green room.
We were live throughout the whole introduction.
Maybe.
Because when it goes 5 seconds, it goes to live, you have to put it on mute.
I did have it on mute. I don't know.
No, you did not. I clearly see it. Anyway, welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I am your host, Dan. Joining me tonight from his studio in the great state of Michigan is my co-host, Alex.
Hello.
And our special guest, Miss Angel, for a period of time.
Yes.
And hopefully, at some point maybe, we might have Austin joining us, but he is currently running the live feed for us. But you can join us as well. All you got to do is call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735, and that brings you into the studio with us. You can also catch us on the Facebook Live on the BTS page on the Screen Radio Show. Put your comments in there, and we will either answer them on the air or on live. Sorry, I'm catching up on these where, you know, Austin was saying we weren't muted.
I mean, it is what it is. It's been a rough, listen, we're just going to chalk it up to the rest of the day. I don't care. We're done. The day is almost over.
Anyway.
It'll be all right.
It's not the first time we've messed up on here. It's definitely not going to be the last time. It's partially my fault because I was rushing to get home to, you know, get on the air with everybody. All right. Speaking of Facebook, go up into your search bar, type in Behind the Screen Radio Show if you have not done that already. Be the first one that pops up. Click like, share, and follow. That way you're kept up to date on everything going on in Movie of the Week and in the Cinephiles. Also head on over to Wikicuriosity Media's Facebook page and follow. That way you can be kept up to date on everything going on in Wikicuriosity Media Land. From the website, you can access the Facebook page, www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WCMedia. It's a mouthful. You can go to any of the pages that are associated with Wikicuriosity Media and access the webpage. Any of the Facebook pages, you can access the webpage. on the website. We've got pictures. We've got information. We've got all kinds of things related to Wiki Curiosity Media. We've got our blogs. I do realize that it needs to be updated. There's a lot of things that have been happening over the past few months that have restricted us from updating the webpage.
And a lot of things coming.
Yeah.
You know, if we update it too much, we will literally have to go back and change everything.
So, but we will get that updated for you real soon. From the website, you can access all of our old shows, every show that's ever been on Wicked Curiosity Network at all, whether it's the radio network, the media network, anything like that. You can access that. Wow, yeah, there's a lot of crap on here. They reloaded everything. Sorry, I was looking at our soundboard. You can also access the YouTube channel, Wiki Curiosity Media. On the YouTube channel, we've got some older videos of us. We've got some downloads of some of our shows from our Facebook Live. So, yeah, you can access those. Go and, you know, subscribe and become, you know, be updated when we post new stuff. All right. So, it's been a few weeks since BTS or, you know, really any show has been on the air. Past couple weeks, we've had some software and hardware issues that we were trying to figure out. We've got it all sorted out for the most part right now. I will ask, you know, bear with us as we will be shifting here very shortly into some different avenues. So be aware of that. But, I apologize for not being on the air as consistently as we would like. Again, like I said, we've had some software issues. We've had some hardware issues. We've had some host issues, co-host issues. Just all kinds of little minor things that just added up for us, and we kind of had to take a break. So, but we're back now. We're back on the air. So how's everybody doing?
Good. Pretty good. Can't complain.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Anything interesting going on, Alex?
Not going on, but I just got back from a trip seeing my buddies in West Virginia, where I used to live. Got into some shenanigans there, had some fun, and came back home. Not so fun. On the drive, kind of hate it, but it's whatever. I don't mind it all too much. But other than that, I don't really have too much going on.
Well, that's good.
Trips and hanging out with friends. That's always fun.
Yeah. Sounds like the perfect life for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miss Angel, anything interesting?
No, I really just want this week to be over. I'm exhausted. I have found that while I don't waver in my decision to do virtual learning for the year, like, I'm really glad this year is so close to being done.
Yeah, I will say that the schools around here don't exactly cater to
virtual learners. The virtual learners. They were left out of the loop on most things, especially on the high school level, and then they were left out of so many things. And like I was telling Bian earlier, generally when end of year happens, my only job is to show up. Just show up and be there. And I'm finding that this year there's a lot more that has to be done, and I'm tired. I've spent my entire day today in a car, running kids from one place to another, trying to get things done. And I'm done with today. I'm done with today. Today was not the day. Today felt like Monday. It feels like Monday on a Wednesday, and I'm just looking forward to Friday. And then next week we only have 2 days left, and I can turn in these damn Chromebooks and just not deal with school. And then next year they go back to school. I'm not doing it anymore.
But that'll be a big sigh of relief.
I think so. I mean, I still think, you know, I want them to be safe, but at the same time, like, I've got one going in a middle school and one in elementary and one in high school, and I really didn't have any downtime this year.
Yeah.
It was a constant dump of, like, homework and meetings and trying to figure out, you know, how these classes work and some classes not having teachers, which made no sense. And after spending over 365 days in this house with my kids 24/7, I'm not going to lie. Kind of ready for them to go back to regular school. I love them. I'm all tired. I'm done.
I'm sorry.
We can tackle next year. But as of Tuesday, we're going to get some ice cream and be like, cool. At this point, I don't give a shit what the grades are. I just don't care at this point. I just want it done. I just want to be done. I know. Bad mom. I don't care. Suck it. I don't feel bad. I said what I said. I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my week. But I am looking forward to some big changes with the media network. I think it'll be beneficial to us. I think it'll be beneficial to finding new listeners and maybe moving forward and getting a little further than we've been able to on the platform we've been on.
I agree. What I was mentioning, you know, a few minutes ago, we do have some new things going on. We're looking into new ways of reaching out to listeners. So there's probably going to be some downtime again, as we try to figure everything out. So, again.
Not much, though.
No. I just ask that, you know, people just kind of bear with us a little bit. So. All right. Let's see. This day in history, anything?
I don't know.
In 1977, the film Smokey and the Bandit, starring Burt Reynolds and Sally Field and Jackie Gleason, premiered in New York City.
It's cool. I think I've seen that movie like once, but an interesting piece of history.
It is. It's actually, I actually love this movie. It's the typical, smuggler, I guess? Kind of trying to evade the law.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd call him a smuggler.
Bandit and, like, I don't know, rule breaking, fun having people.
Yeah. It's got one of the most iconic cars in the history of film. It's got the 77 Firebird Trans Am, which was the 10th anniversary of the, I believe it's the 10th anniversary edition of the Firebird. And it was just absolutely beautiful. It was all black. It had the gold trim around it, the gold wheels. It had the T-tops, had the typical 77 styling to it. It was just such a beautiful car. And it's, again, one of the most iconic vehicles in movie history.
Yeah, I like it. I think I like... there's something about the car when you see it on screen. Like, you know something mischievous is going to go down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw a clone on the road the other day. I seriously doubt it was an original edition, because they're very few, far between, and hard to find, and very expensive. But you can make a clone out of a regular 77 Firebird. It's not hard. And it actually looked really nice. It actually looked, you know, almost identical to the movie version.
Yeah, I always like it when people do something like that. Like, whether it be the General Lee or a car from, you know, the Fast and Furious franchise, I like when people see something on screen and then they have such an appreciation for it that they would make it themselves and spend their own money on it, spend their own time. And then make it how they want it and have that little piece of history with them, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's surprising
how people do it. Like, the amount of research that goes into something like that just blows me away. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when you start looking at some of these other iconic vehicles. When you've got, like, Kit from Knight Rider, there's another big one that people like to do, which is also I think it's an 84 or an 85 Trans Am. When you've got people that do up the interior exactly like it. Unfortunately, they can't do the steering wheel because that's illegal. It has to be a full steering wheel. But... It's kind of cool when you see these people recreate these iconic vehicles. Another big one, and one that I absolutely love that I would just absolutely spend the money for, is the 1966-67 version of the Batmobile.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Like, that is the iconic Batmobile. You know what you want mm-hmm. about the 90s and you know, on through there, but that is the iconic Batmobile.
Yeah, you're talking about the Adam West one?
Yes. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that one, it's pretty cool.
And it's, so one of the things that I love most about it, other than, you know, all the flashy gadgets and all cool things and, you know, all the, you know, the bat radar and the bat parachutes and all that, is the fact that the car was built on a concept vehicle from Ford. It was built on the Ford Futura frame and the concept, and the car never actually came out, but they made the Batmobile off of that concept, and it was literally one of a kind vehicle.
Yeah, I think that makes it even like that much harder to replicate, because you can't, obviously you can't buy those. So
right,
if you can replicate that, then tip the hat to you, sir. Congratulations. I don't know, that would be awfully hard. Like, I don't know, with the Smokey and the Bandit car, you just go out and buy one and get the parts offline and stuff and just swap them out. So with that, you gotta do like fabrication, like body kits and stuff like that. And I don't know. I could never do that.
Yeah, it'd be for something like that Batmobile, it would be really, really hard to replicate because you have to find a vehicle that looks somewhat similar to it and then completely customize it. But for some of the other vehicles out there, like the General Lee, the kit from Knight Rider, even the 18 van and the Scooby-Doo van, those are fairly easy because really all you need for a lot of them is a paint job.
Yeah, and like some little trim things and little add-ons and whatnot. But I don't know, for a full like car overhaul, I don't know. I can just imagine the like cost and expense and man hours it would take to make that Batmobile. People are crazy if they do that. I don't know, to tell you, I'd just buy one off an auction or something.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to say, like, yeah, I bought or built it, but I'm not there yet, I don't think.
No, not quite there with the skills and the knowledge and stuff that I have. So. Okay, yeah, so it was a 55 Lincoln Futura concept car. Is what the Batmobile was based off of. Oh, I'm looking at it right now. A lot of them use like a 76 Lincoln body.
Yeah.
So I've seen some that are built off of Corvettes and stuff like that. Like 70s Lincoln Town Cars.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I thought I heard somebody or something somewhere on like a prop video that I was watching that people use the old Impalas because they got that long body to them.
Yeah.
They use those. And you just got to do some fabrication work.
Yeah, there's a lot of fabrication that goes into creating these because you have to get the mold and then then you have to put it all together and it's all made out of fiberglass and all that. And it's just, there's a lot that goes into not only the body styling, but the interior and stuff like that. It was just,
it's a shame this car never came out. It kind of looks pretty cool.
It does. The actual concept car?
Yeah, it looks like something out of, like, the Jetsons or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see how you could look at that and see the Batmobile.
Yeah. Like, that sharp angle in the back.
Yeah, you've got the sharp fins in the back. You've got the pointed covers for the headlights and the pointed front end. I mean, it looks like a 60s version Batmobile.
It looks like almost fictional.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like the wheels could just fold up into the car and just kind of fly away.
Yeah, I know on the game Batman Arkham Knight, you can like drive around in the Batmobile and stuff. And they had like different packs that you could get. And there was one, it was the 65 Batmobile, and I had it, and I was just driving around modern-day Gotham City in a 65 Batmobile as Ben Affleck's Batman, just beating up criminals.
That would be awesome. That would definitely be awesome.
I'd like to see that in a movie one day.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, the more that I look at the original 66 Batmobile, the more I look at pictures of it and stuff like that, the more that I really absolutely just love the design, the concept, and the styling of it.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique design. And I think the, like we said before, those, like, fins in the back definitely inspired some of the newer Batmobiles. Like, the 89 one had those same, like, I don't know if it's fins, but, like, they still had, like, the bat wings or fins on the back. Like, I think just about every Batmobile has had some sort of fin or some sort of wing or something on the back of it. Besides the Tumbler from the Dark Knight series.
Well, I mean, even if you look at the Tumbler, it's got the fins in the back, the flaps to kind of keep it pointed down so it doesn't get airborne.
Yeah.
And to help guide it and stuff like that. It's still, you still kind of have that.
They just gave
iconic,
it a use.
Yeah.
Or like a purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that from that design, if you just, like, I mean, if you look at cars from the 60s and you just go through the decades, I think the Batmobile is kind of kept up with that car evolution style, besides, like, a whole tank, of course. But, like, the 89 Batmobile, it's totally something you'd see out of the 80s or 90s.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they definitely keep in line with the era of what they were trying to, you know, the decade that they were in and what they were trying to portray Batman as and, you know, stuff like that. If you look at, if we go back to the 66 Batmobile, we look at the 60s, that's really when color TV was starting to become pretty popular in homes, and they were becoming less expensive and more affordable for people to purchase, you know, and have in their homes. So there was a lot of flashy color and a lot of bright colors on the screen. And you can see that in that Batmobile. I mean, yeah, the Batmobile is black, obviously, but the red trim is really bright red. The bat symbol on the door is bright red. You've got the really flashy chrome wheels on it. And you've got the chrome exhaust. You've got the big red light on top. And there's a lot of, like, color and flash and flare to the 60s Batmobile.
Yeah, it definitely screams, I was made in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we look at the 89 Keaton Batmobile, and it's definitely more subdued, more sleek, more aerodynamic.
Bit more fictional.
Definitely a bit more fictional, a lot more low to the ground. And just kind of encapsulating Batman. And then you've got the big turbine on the front, which powers the, again, the turbine in the rear. And it's very similar to, like, I mean, it is like a jet-powered Batmobile.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you've got the, you know, machine guns that pop out of the wheel well and the rockets and stuff.
Even, like, in the new, like, the Robert Pattinson Batman Batmobile, it's still got that I mean, I assume it's a muscle car, but it still has, like, that body work where it has those fins on the back. I quite like it, actually.
I'm looking at
it. I don't know. A lot of people didn't like it when they first saw it in, like, the teaser. I think it was, like, last year or something. People didn't like it at all. But, I don't know, I kind of like it. It fits the style and tone that we're going for. Even though the movie hasn't come out yet, you can kind of gather. It's a little darker, a little more realistic, kind of like the Dark Knight series.
Yeah. So what I'm looking at right now, so I'm looking at a couple pictures. It is more of a muscle car feel to it, and I think they modeled it after, I don't remember what car they modeled it after, but it's definitely got the fins in the back, but it looks like, because from what I'm understanding, Robert Pattinson, the new Batman movie coming out, is like his early years as Batman.
I think it's his second year, it takes place during his second year as Batman.
Okay, so he hasn't quite fully developed his style yet. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it makes sense that he would take a, because it looks almost similar to like a Charger or like a CUDA. Like a Barracuda or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's like a mesh of all of them, like a Barracuda and a Charger.
Yeah, like the old 70s old 70s muscle cars.
Yeah.
It makes sense that that's what he would do in his first couple years, is just take a car, you know, kind of beef it up a little bit, obviously, with the engine, because it's a mid-engine.
Well, speaking of the engine, I think he might have two engines in it. Because he's got the one on the back with, like, the big jet turbine on it, like his one that, like, shoots the flames and whatnot. But what does he have? He's got to have something in the front. Like, there's lights and whatnot coming out of it.
Right. It could be, you know, of course, it's just going off of speculation because we don't know. I mean, it could be all kinds of different, like, gadgets and gizmos and stuff like that that are in the front.
God, I can't wait to see this movie.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, without a doubt.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about the suit at first, like, when I first saw it, when they, like, did the little teaser when it was all red, like, they put a red filter over everything. I was like, I don't know about that. That kind of looks weird. And then I saw it in the trailer, and I was like, okay, that kind of looks cool. And now that I'm seeing it more and more and more, it's growing on me. And it's, like, up there already as, like, one of my more favorite bat suits. I like it a lot.
And I think I actually have to agree with you on that, because you can see there's a lot of silver trim on that. On the bat suit. It's not, I mean, you've got some silver and some gray. It's not all black, like a lot of the other bat suits that we've seen. And I'll be honest, when they announced Robert Pattinson as the new Batman, I was almost as pissed off as when I heard about Ben Affleck being the new Batman.
Yeah, I wasn't too thrilled about it either. I was like, oh, come on now. There was so many other candidates that people wanted so bad, and then you chose Robert freaking Pattinson. But now that I saw the trailer, I'm like, okay, I'll give the guy a shot. Like, he's got that Bruce Wayne kind of aura about him. You know, like, he can be that billionaire playboy guy. But then when he puts, like, a suit and cowl on, if you just bulk him up just a little bit, I can definitely see him being a good Batman.
I can see him. So I'm not real clear about Robert Pattinson's work. Of course, most of what I know about Robert Pattinson comes from the Twilight Saga, which was just a crap set of movies for me.
I don't know. I like to separate artists from, not really artists, but like an actor from what he's been in. Because to me, he was in Twilight. It did well for his career, but those movies weren't the best. But then you see him in other movies. I haven't seen him in too many other movies. But the movie just recently that we watched and reviewed, Devil All the Time. He played that weird pastor guy. I thought he did fantastic for the position that he was in.
Honestly, that was the movie that actually changed my mind about that fully changed my mind about him becoming Batman. Because I saw his work in the Twilight Saga, and I absolutely hated the Twilight Saga. I'll be honest. It was just complete crap for me. I know it's based on books, and I get that.
We have to remember, it wasn't written for us. It was written for teenage girls.
And you're right. So my view and my opinion of...
This Batman is our Twilight. it was written for us. We finally get our turn with Robert Pattinson.
Right? It's our time now.
All the teenage girls are grown up now, and they could care less.
And now they're going to watch him and Batman and be like, oh my God, I love Batman so much. I've loved Batman since I first saw it on the screen. Bitch, I've been loving Batman since, you know, I saw Batman on Super Friends when I was 5 years old, all right?
Oh my God, did you guys know Batman is a vampire?
Oh my God.
I didn't know Batman was in Twilight.
Did you know that Batman played in Twilight?
Guys, he's actually a vampire bat.
No, that's Man-Bat. Batman, that's Man-Bat.
Man-Bat messed up with some drugs. That's what happened. That's what happened with Man-Bat.
Right. Man-Bat had a little fling with Martha Wayne. Oops, did I say that? But seeing his performance...
That's why he's out at night, because he can't go in the daylight.
That's Blade. That's a whole different...
He's a vampire. If he fights crime in the daytime, they'll see him sparkle and shine everywhere.
But Adam West did it, and he managed not to sparkle and shine.
Adam West also isn't a vampire.
This is true. Adam West is a legend.
Although he is not a vampire, he will live forever.
Yes. Absolutely.
Anyway, Robert Pattinson's Batman. Pretty stoked about it.
Yeah. Watching him in... oh, crap. I just forgot the name of the movie.
Devil All the Time?
Yeah. Watching him in Devil All the Time really showed me his range of acting. You know, I mean, he played a really creepy, kind of narcissistic preacher in post-Vietnam.
World War II.
Was it post-World War II? Yeah, post-World War II, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're right.
Luger, that was a Nazi gun.
That's right. I don't know how I got that messed up. I was thinking South Pacific.
They were in Japan.
Yeah.
or the main character's dad was in Japan.
That's right. Post-World War II, Virginia and Ohio, West Virginia and Ohio. And just his range of acting and just the creepiness that I felt from the guy. Like, I absolutely hated the character. And I love the way that Robert Pattinson portrayed him. And it was just a phenomenal job.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of good movies in the past, like, 2 years. He was in The Lighthouse, which I think was Oscar-nominated for Best Picture. It was kind of weird. I caught, like, snippets of it. It's a really weird movie. He was in Tenet, which I think was also Oscar-nominated. He was in another movie, too.
I have not seen Tenet yet. It's one that I want to see.
It's on HBO Max. You might watch it sometime.
We might actually watch it and review it for Sunday's show. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I mean, a lot of people that I know have seen it. They said it was a pretty dang good movie. But, no, I guess I'll have to watch it.
Hmm.
I've been wanting to watch it, but I just never got around to it.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I'm actually, I have the same trepidations about Robert Pattinson that I had about Ben Affleck. Because we know how I feel about Ben Affleck. He wasn't a good main character. He's a really good supporting actor, just not a really good main actor until I saw him in Batman vs. Superman, which I still maintain is not that great of a movie because there's a lot of issues within the movie. But when you pair that together with the Snyder Cut of Justice League, they're both, it's a really good story.
I've always kind of liked Ben Affleck's Batman. It's always intrigued me how different he was from the previous Batman.
And I think that's what made me like him, is I like him as Bruce Wayne. I really, really like Ben Affleck. Because Bruce Wayne, he did good job. And I agree with you. I like him as well, too. He did a good job as an older, little more...
Exactly. That's what, I don't know, that that age range of Batman from, like, 35 to 45, his prime years, I think is just... There's so many different stories you can tell within that. And then you get into Ben Affleck's range, which is like 45, 55. He's getting a little bit older, can't really hang out with the young guns anymore. But he can still whoop some butt, and he's still smart. I don't know. Affleck's very good with it.
And I think Ben Affleck did a really good job of portraying just the how do I describe it? Batman is just really tired of the bullshit from criminals, especially in Gotham City.
Yeah, he's tired of doing the same thing over and over again and not getting the same. He's going insane, and he's trying to break that cycle. And I think the way that they kind of showed that with, like, it wasn't a big part of the movie, but with the Robin suit, he kind of looked at it and he was like, well, this is what happened last time I let something go like this. So I got to nip it in the bud this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like how they portrayed it. How he portrayed Batman.
He did really well, especially with the script that he was given. Wasn't the best. It could have been a lot better. Honestly, Batman versus Superman could have been a lot better.
It had a lot of potential.
It did. And you and I have talked both on air and off air ad nauseum about the good and the bad about Batman versus Superman. But I will say that Ben Affleck was the saving grace for that movie. He did really well as as Bruce Wayne, and he did really good as Batman, too.
And the thing is, they checked, like, all the points for Batman. They showed his detective work. They showed his, like, his spy skills and espionage. They showed his fighting skills. They displayed him being able to be Bruce Wayne in a public setting, like, even in a private setting with Alfred. They just checked all the boxes for Batman. I don't think, I mean, Christian Bale did it, but I don't think there's just, like, two boxes he don't really check all that well. It's the fighting and, like, the spy, like, espionage type of stuff. And then they kind of built on that with the Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises. But with Ben Affleck, they just checked all the boxes. And I think that's what they're going to do with Robert Pattinson. I think this is going to be a detective-heavy movie. Like, he's going to try to solve a crime. I think the Riddler is going to be the main villain, which I'm super excited for. If I can just kind of play it out, how it's going to go, those two going back and forth. In the trailer, we saw that he can fight. He's got the gadgets. He's got the smarts. I just don't think he'll be a very good, like, spy and espionage ninja type of Batman, which is okay.
It's only his second year as Batman.
True. That is true. It's only his second year. He's still trying to learn the ropes. I mean, he's the world's greatest detective, not world's greatest spy.
Right, right. And, I mean, he develops his skills and his knowledge over time. And we're seeing a very, in this new Batman movie coming up, we're seeing a very early version of who Batman is.
I think the earliest we've seen him previously was Christian Bale's in Batman Begins. Like, we literally saw the origins of Batman in that movie. But at the same time, he was still kind of older. He was still, I don't know, like 30s?
He was Batman in his 20s.
Yeah. I think that's when Batman first started, when he was in his, like, late 20s. Because he went away for a while, training with the League of Assassins and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I'm excited for it. I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to this new Batman movie. I really am. I'm hoping that it's the same quality as the Joker movie that we had.
Yeah. That's kind of like the vibe I'm getting from it, is it's kind of real world. It's almost like a perfect blend between Ben Affleck and Christian Bale. So you got real world, modern Batman, and then you got super just off the walls comic book style Batman. I think Robert Pattinson might be that kind of perfect melding between the two.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that you're right. You know, I think with the current DC EU that we've got, there's a lot of hit and misses. Now, I'm not expecting Joker, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker and Robert Pattinson's Batman to be in the same universe.
No. From what I understand, and, like, the different rumors and stuff, completely rumors. I don't think any of this I'm about to say is factually correct. It's just rumors. I think they're going to try to play off Robert Pattinson's Batman as an Earth 2 Batman. And then after the Flash movie that's coming out, I think it will have Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck in it. Those two will be reprising their roles in the new Flash movie coming out. Supergirl has been casted, that's a fact, for the Flash movie.
Okay.
So I think after the Flash movie, they'll kind of do like a soft reboot, almost like a Flashpoint, I think is what they're kind of going for. There'll be like a soft reboot with it, and they might introduce Robert Pattinson's Batman, or they might keep Ben Affleck, depending. Because after the success of the Snyder Cut, people, I know I was wanting more Ben Affleck Batman, but people were really wanting to see more of him, so who knows?
Yeah. I'm wanting more of that universe. I would like to see the different versions of how that universe could go.
Yeah.
You know, like the Nightmare universe.
Honestly, as long as I get more DC movies, I'm a DC guy. I don't know if anybody knows that, but I like DC. So I really want to see some freaking DC movies. I'm tired of them doing bad, and then they cancel all these movies. And then, you know, we get a Snyder Cut. And now they're bringing all these movies back. It's almost like the people who made the movie were right in the first place. But I'm just so excited for the new DC slate that's coming out. Titan Season 3 is coming out soon, too.
That I will be excited for, because...
I think they're releasing it monthly. I don't know, they're going to release it throughout the year, not like that whole... I think it'll be 8 or 9 episodes, and they're going to release it throughout the year, and I think the first episode might come out this summer. I don't know, that's a rumor. I'm hoping it does, because maybe we could watch it.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite show, and it people hate it, but I love it.
You are actually the one that got me into that show, and now I have to have a season 3.
Yeah. I mean, I can see how people don't like it, but at the same time, this is the first time somebody like HBO Max and DC has tried to do something like this, like a Titans Heroes show. I mean, we've had the CW DC shows, which, in my opinion, aren't that good. But I'm just excited to see where they take it. And, you know, Nightwing's my favorite hero of all time from DC and Marvel. And they brought him in. Sorry, spoiler alert. But they brought him in Season 2 at the end, and he fights Deathstroke. That was such a geek moment for me to see that happen. To see that happen live. And the suit looked fantastic. I'm still trying to make a custom action figure for that suit. I just can't find the right body to do it. So, I don't know. I just get real geeked out every time I see it. I love it. So I'm so glad Nightwing got the recognition he freaking deserves. Because every time he's in, like, a movie, like an animated movie or a video game, he always gets, like, crapped on. Like, in the Injustice universe, he literally dies by getting one of his Escrima sticks thrown at him, and he hits his head on a rock and dies. Like, are you kidding me? That's not how Dick Grayson dies. Come on now.
That's then, a crap way to get rid of him.
Yeah. Well, he did become something more. He became Dead Man. He was basically just a ghost, which is cool. But, and, like, in the DC animated universe, he kind of gets his butt kicked all the time, but he does some butt kicking. He goes toe-to-toe with Batman with a dislocated shoulder and Deathstroke. So he's still badass, but at the same time, he kind of gets his butt kicked. Kind of gets the poop end of the stick.
Yeah.
But seeing him jump on top of that SUV, pull out his Extrema sticks, and then they showed him, like, with the electricity. Oh, man. I geeked out so hard. They did it.
Yeah.
I'm geeking out now about it. I just love it. And he did so good as Robin, too. Like, I loved him. Like, Brendan, I can't even say his last name. I think it's Swatties. Yeah, Brendan Swatties, perfect casting. I don't care what anybody says, perfect casting. That's my definitive Dick Grayson right there for live action.
I can see that, yeah. Definitely agree.
Yeah, it's something else. Still disappointed that people hate the show, because there's some people that absolutely hate it, but then there's people like me that love it. Because it's a good show. I mean, there's some filming techniques that they kind of did wrong. Or not did wrong, but kind of messed up on. And some of the scripting is kind of eh. Like the story, they could have gone different ways. But the way they handled Nightwing's arc, or Dick Grayson's arc, I should say, and kind of melded that in with the Titans, I just think it was fantastic. Because it's not really about, it's about the Titans, but it's about how Dick Grayson messes up as a leader Like, we don't really see that with Batman, but we see that with Dick Grayson. And, I don't know, it just kind of humanizes the heroes a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I like the show.
It makes it more human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know something that people really don't like is the filters they put on. It has, like, a blue filter to it sometimes. But that honestly doesn't bug me that much. You know, I'm still seeing the same things play out. And it kind of gives it more of a darker tone to the show.
I agree to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it, honestly. I mean, it's not the perfect show. I'll admit its faults. But that's not going to stop me from liking the show.
No. No. All right. I want to switch gears a little bit here for a minute.
Okay.
If that's all right with you. And talk about another one of our biggest fandoms that you and I have.
Yes.
So it is the month of May. And, you know, typically on the Cinephiles, what we do is each week we, you know, would pick a certain section of Star Wars and talk about, like, the prequels and the sequels and the original and TV shows and stuff like that. But there's one thing that I wanted to specifically talk to you about. Simply because it's bothered me ever since the first time that I saw it.
Okay.
So, I've recently started rewatching the Rebels cartoon series for Star Wars.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, Rebels is it's a cartoon series. I think it was done by Disney X, and it was originally featured on Disney X, the channel.
Disney XD. It was like the teenage version of Disney.
There are a lot of continuations from the Clone Wars before we got the final season. I think our live video has been interrupted for a minute.
It's getting kind of choppy.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
Okay, that was a little slow. Yeah, I think we're having some issues.
We're not muted, by the way.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Alrighty. Sorry about that. We had some connection issues. So we've got, I don't know if it's AT&T, I don't know if it's our power company or whatever. They're doing work on lines outside of the studio. So every once in a while, we tend to lose internet connection. Yesterday, the studio and the house was completely without internet for 9 hours. So it's a good thing. Falling from Grace didn't have a show yesterday. So, but we are back on the air. Again, if you want to call in 718-664-9735. That'll bring you into the studio with us. If you missed the first half of the show, you missed a lot, actually. We talked a good deal about the Batmobile and Robert Pattinson and Ben Affleck and all that good stuff. Right now, we're switching up gears a little bit. So, Alex.
Yes.
Okay. Making sure you were with me.
Yep.
Like I was saying, I started rewatching the Rebels TV show. It starts a couple of years before episode 4. It leads right up to episode 4. It kind of delves into the formation of the rebellion and how these little splinter cells and stuff like that actually became the full-fledged, full-on rebellion that we see in episode 4. It also kind of follows, well, I mean, it directly follows a Jedi that survived Order 66 as a Padawan, Kanan Jarrus, and his Padawan, not really Padawan, but his, I don't even want to call him apprentice, but the guy he's teaching, Ezra Bridger, who actually
became his learner.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to describe it. And then their adventures through the galaxy and stuff like that, fighting the Empire and, you know, seeking out rebels and creating this alliance and stuff like that, and Ezra's journey to becoming a full-fledged Jedi. Ahsoka's a big part of it, or she was in season 2. We see her later on in season 4. But there's one thing that has always really just bugged me about this TV series, and Alex, you and I have talked about it off air before, but I wanted to bring it up, is the very, what's the word I'm looking for? The liberties that they take with not only the Force as a whole, but the different aspects of Force users and their weapons.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that bugs the crap out of me, and it almost ruins the series, is the Inquisitor's lightsabers.
Yeah.
My biggest question is, number one, how do they even function? And number two, how the fuck do they fly with them?
That is a good question.
So
the flying part, I don't really, like, understand. I think it's just, like, an assisted force jump. Or, like, I don't know, they kind of just use the lightsabers or, like, the mechanism inside the lightsaber as a force to pull them up, and they just use the force to assist them. As of how they work, I think it literally, the crystals sit on the two outside parts, and when they're ignited and, like, when they spin, it just, it's a constant charge, because that's how a lightsaber is powered. It has a power cell that spins. That's kind of what gives the lightsaber its weight. It's the simulated weight. And it spins, and it spins in a certain way, and you use the force to counteract that. So I think that's what's making it go. There's a power cell in the middle of the lightsaber, and then I think there's two main power cells on the outside. I think this actually might be where the power cells are at, is the outside where they spin. And when they spin, they're generating energy, constantly charging. So that's kind of how it works. And the crystals are also on the outside. And then in the middle, it has all the wiring and probably the second focus crystal is in there. So that's kind of how they work. But it's very outlandish, I think. You're kind of pushing it a little bit with the how it works. Because it's like, it's almost like you take, because you can't have wireless power in, like, Star Wars with a lightsaber. Like, that's not really how it works. Like, lightsabers do have a battery life. They do need to kind of charge, but they kind of charge themselves. Like, you don't have to plug it. You can plug it in for a quick charge. But as far as a, like, charging your phone, it doesn't really do that. It kind of charges itself. With
right.
those, you have a bunch of wiring that goes into that. So with it spinning like that, I'd assume that there's not really that much wiring on the outside where the turbines spin. So I don't know. I would assume it's just like electromagnet sort of deal. Now we have that in our world. It's probably like that in their world. I'm not saying it's electromagnetic, but how it works is probably how that functions. It's possible, but it's kind of just, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. I don't know about that. Kind of
so,
a little bit.
The way that I understand lightsabers, and I've even done some research on how these work. So the Kyber crystal not only gives the lightsaber its color, but also focuses the beam.
Yeah, so there's two. In most lightsabers, there's actually two crystals. There's the power crystal, and then there's the focusing crystal. Focusing
right.
crystal is what, like, keeps it stable and whatnot. It focuses the beam. And the power crystal is what gives it its damage and, like, power. Yeah. If I just get out my Star Wars Ultimate Complete Edition Visual Dictionary, I could tell you. Yeah, that's kind of how it works. That's what
so,
I mean, that is how it works.
So what I'm looking at, let me see if I can find it. Okay. I had it, but I lost it. So from what I understand, power from the cell, and this is coming off of a website, power from the cell is sent through a series of focusing lenses, converting the raw energy into dangerous plasma. The plasma is channeled through the Kyber crystal, which gives it the color. And then the plasma is forged into a beam. After it goes through the lightsaber crystal, becomes focused. It's sent through field energizers and modulation circuitry in the emitter. It's there that the focus is a beam of energy kept in check by a containment field. These fields prevent lightsabers from simply passing through each other when they connect. So you have all of this different energy and all of this different power that's going through the entire hilt of the lightsaber, which causes the blade. You have the field energizers, modulation circuitry, and all of this is used to focus the beam of energy and keep it contained within a containment field.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going through the entire hilt of the lightsaber.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the problem we have with the Inquisitor lightsabers is
exactly.
How do they work without totally ripping out the internals? And that's where I think the electromagnet technology that we have kind of comes in, because it's kind of like wireless power. Like, it uses energy to power something up, like a spin or something, like a turbine.
So right.
I think that's how it works. It just gets rid of the wires that connects the power cell and stuff like that to the crystal and whatnot.
Okay. So I got into another website detailing explicitly the Inquisitor's lightsaber. And it says the weapon featured a ringed emitter, which could partially detach from the cylindrical hand grip in the center, allowing the twin blades to rotate rapidly without effort from the wielder.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you have a ringed emitter? Like, the emitter is... It's not the ring from the blade. So the blade, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, an Inquisitor's lightsaber is basically a double-bladed lightsaber like Darth Maul had that has the hilt on the inside and two emitters on the outside. And then you've got a ring around it, which is kind of cool as a hand guard and very useful as a weapon when the blades are not ignited. But the fact that the actual emitters detach from the handle and spin makes absolutely no sense, because when you detach the emitter from the handle, the blade becomes unstable.
Or in, like, Kanan Jarrus's situation, where he can just break his apart and, like, store it so he can hide it easier, his just straight up doesn't work if he does that. He has to put
right.
it together, then turn it on.
Right.
How theirs work, I don't know. That's a tough question. I know how it could work, but it's either not really, like, it's just not how that works. A lightsaber is a very delicate weapon. It just takes a lot to build those things.
Yeah.
Those things are mini nuclear reactors sitting on your hip. Like, you have to be very delicate with those things. And to just rip the emitters off and have them spinning willy-nilly and flying with them seems kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, because if you... Where is it? On this other website that I was looking at. If you invert the emitter matrix, the lightsaber could literally blow up in your hands and kill you.
Yeah, and then that's where I have a problem with Ezra's first lightsaber, how it can turn into a blaster. How does that work without totally annihilating the person that's getting shot with it? Because it only stuns. It doesn't kill.
Right, it's just a small beam of electricity that shoots out.
I guess the lightsaber kind of powers it. It doesn't really shoot the energy from the lightsaber.
Right. It's more from the power cell than from the kyber crystals.
Yeah, there was a... you remember Jocasta Nu, the librarian in the old... Not the Old Republic, but the Republic era?
Yeah.
The prequel era, I should say. She made a lightsaber-powered rifle that shot lightsaber energy. Like, her lightsaber was literally the ammo for the gun.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember reading about that. That's actually just kind of cool, I'm not going to lie.
That makes sense, though. Like, you're using power from the lightsaber, and you're literally just shooting a beam of plasma light, whatever the lightsaber is. It's not laser.
Right.
It's a, that it's lightsaber energy is just being exploded out of the end of a gun, which is pretty badass when, you know, you if you look up Jocasta News, this frail woman librarian, and she's got this freaking Barrett 50 cal looking gun, and she just loads her lightsaber into it.
Well, I mean, we can't discount Jocasta News. She held her own against Darth Vader when he was in his suit.
Yeah, I'm just saying, when you see her, she's just this librarian that you wouldn't expect her to be a very skilled adversary, but then she pulls out a lightsaber cannon and almost kills you.
Snipes you from 2 miles away.
Yeah, I mean, that almost sounds crazier than the Inquisitor's lightsabers, not gonna lie.
Yeah. So, about a year ago, when we were doing the breakdown of the different movies and stuff on Cinephiles, I actually watched a YouTube video on some of the most outlandish lightsabers in the Star Wars universe.
I have also seen that video. I've seen many videos on Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed with it.
I'm a little bit obsessed with it. I think we both kind of are.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like that obsessed with it as I pull my lightsaber perfect one-to-one replica off myself. That's sitting next to 10-plus Luke Skywalker figures from all his different outfits in the movies.
Yeah.
That's also sitting underneath a whole other Star Wars display. That's sitting underneath a Lego Star Wars display. That's sitting above another Star Wars display. I don't know. I would say I'm a little bit into Star Wars.
It's just a little bit, which is why I wanted to have this discussion with you. So some of the weirdest that we've seen the one that I remember seeing, and I'm trying to see if I can find it on here, is the lightsaber suit.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it was, I can't remember who wore, I believe Starkiller, our own Galen Merrick, who sadly got killed whenever Disney took over. I think he was the one that had wore that, or it was an ancient Sith Lord. I believe it was the ancient Sith Lord.
I think it was the ancient Sith Lord.
Galen Merrick had something similar to it, though. Or did something similar to it, or fought something similar to it. He's related to that somehow. I know that for sure. But the actual suit came from an ancient Sith Lord. It was almost like an Iron Man suit, but it had like lightsabers coming out of it, like lightsaber gauntlets that shot out from his gauntlets. He had like it was the only thing I could compare it to is an Iron Man suit that literally had lightsabers coming out of it.
Yeah, like he had it coming out of his elbows, out of his wrist, out of his knees. Like, this thing was just the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, that one tops them all, in my opinion. Is a suit that has many lightsabers coming out of
the... I literally looked up lightsaber suit, and the first thing that came up is what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I look up. And, I mean, he's got him coming out of his knees, out of his wrist, out of his forearms, out of his elbows. Like, are you really going to fight with your knees? Like, why do you need lightsabers in your knees?
I'm going to cut something off. He goes to punch somebody, and his whole arm just falls off.
What?
That's weird. I know one of my favorite lightsabers from the Expanded Universe, I can't remember what the Sith Lord's name was, but he was an ancient Sith Lord. I think he was also a fallen Jedi. But he had a double-bladed lightsaber, but only one end can be ignited at a time. One end was red, and the other end was green. And it was more of a lightsaber club. Like, it was a bigger lightsaber. But I think that one was just pretty cool. Like, I think it's kind of lame that only one side can be ignited at once, but at the same time, I kind of like that. Like, it makes it different and unique.
Yeah, it makes sense, depending on, like, because if you look at regular lightsabers, how it's focused, it could have been simply the, what I'm looking for, like the power cell. There wasn't enough power to ignite both, so you ignited one, and then you ignited the other.
Yeah, you know, it's something that's kind of really bugging me about modern Star Wars nowadays is like with the comics and the books that are coming out. They're kind of giving crossguard lightsabers to pretty much everybody. Like, there's a comic that just came out. Luke uses a red crossguard lightsaber, like Kylo Ren's, but it was stable, in a comic in between 5 and 6 before he made his green one.
Yeah.
And he used that. He used the old Jedi Sentinel, Jedi Guardian Temple Guard lightsaber. I don't know. He was just kind of picking up all these different lightsabers in between 5 and 6 because he kind of lost the one that he had. A lot of Jedi and the High Republic books that are coming out, like, half of them have crossguard lightsabers. It's like, why do you got to give everybody a freaking crossguard lightsaber? Like, that was what was unique about Kylo Ren. It was his lightsaber and, you know, some other things about him. But, like, when you look at a crossguard lightsaber, you're like, oh, yeah, it's Kylo Ren's lightsaber. Like, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was stable. Like, it had a purpose to be the crossguard. But then,
yeah,
you know, Disney was like, hey, that idea was cool. Let's just run it into the ground and not make it cool anymore. Ezra had a green one in Rebels. He picked it up.
It's not unique
anymore. Like, honestly, I think the only one that looks cool is Kylo Ren's because it is unstable and has a purpose for being a crossguard lightsaber.
Yeah, there's an actual purpose for that lightsaber because his crystal broke when he tried to bleed it, The crossguards are part of the bleed off.
And I don't get why in the High Republic everybody has one, because the High Republic literally takes place, I mean, because it's the crossguard, ancient design. I say ancient for a reason. Ancient design, nobody's seen it in years. The High Republic, where almost every freaking Jedi has one, literally takes place not even, like, I think it's 800 years. Yoda's in it.
Yeah.
Yoda is a younger Jedi in it. That's not ancient. Like, 800 years in the Star Wars universe is not ancient at all whatsoever.
No.
Like, that's... Like, 800 years in the Star Wars universe is 50 years for us. Maybe 100 years. Like, that's not an ancient design. And then all of a sudden, absolutely nobody's using them in the prequel era. Or in the original trilogy, we don't hear them. I mean, I get because it wasn't made at the time, but it just is dead for 50 years and then makes a comeback because somebody broke their crystal. It was like, I broke my crystal. I got
how do I bleed up the energy?
I got an idea. Exhaust ports. Oh, original idea, original thought. Oh, no, it was a quote-unquote ancient design. It's like, get out of here.
Yeah, but the other thought to that could be, because Kylo Ren's not a Sith. He's not a Sith Lord at all. He's a Knight of Ren. He's the leader of the Knights of Ren, and he's a Dark Force user. So he could have gone back to like the ancient designs, and when he was trying to, because he was trying to be like his father or his grandfather, Darth Vader, and when he was building his lightsaber, and when he cracked his crystal, he could have like destroyed many hills and then, you know, done some research on older lightsabers.
The lightsaber that he has was his lightsaber when he was a Jedi. He just put exhaust vents on it. It's the same hilt from when he had it when he was training under Luke. It's his blue lightsaber, and he just cracked his blue crystal when he tried to bleed it and kind of messed up. And he was like, oh, I just put exhaust ports on it. And then I get what you're saying. It was an ancient design. And he was like, what if I just use this ancient design and put two and two together? But the problem is, it's not an ancient design. It's just not. Like, I mean, it was around when Yoda was a Jedi. And then all of a sudden, nobody's using that design anymore for 50 years. It just makes no sense to me why they would call something an ancient design and then not make it an ancient design anymore.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Kylo Ren uses an ancient design, but it's not.
Well, I mean, it could have been ancient for them, because you got to figure.
And it's just like me going to, like, buying a 1970 whatever car and going up to you and like, Dad, look at this ancient car. It's not ancient. Old, it's an old design. But it's not an ancient design.
Yeah.
An ancient design would be like freaking horse and carriage. That right there, that's what I would consider ancient. Or like, I don't know, cobblestone roads. Like, I got this ancient design for my new driveway. I got cobblestone roads. Yeah, good for you. But it's not an ancient design. That just irritates me beyond belief. I don't know if you can tell, but it does.
Look at this
cool ancient design. But it's not. It's literally almost old. It's getting old. It's like getting a brick phone and saying, this is such an ancient phone. No, it's 20 years old, man. It's like 30 years old.
It is such an ancient phone, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, it kind of irritates me. It's not old.
So I want to go back to the Inquisitor's lightsaber again for a brief second.
Maybe that's an ancient design.
Oh, God. Please.
I'm just saying.
So if we look at some of the other wielders of double lightsabers, we look at Darth Maul, obviously, who's the most famous.
Absolute badass. I love Darth Maul.
Oh, he's... Yeah.
When we first saw that on screen, and we're like, okay, this guy is weird with this long-ass handle. I think you're better than everybody else. And then we saw the other side come out, and we're like, okay, yeah, you are better than everybody else. Yeah,
right.
What are you going to do?
The first time I saw the double-bladed lightsaber, I was like, holy shit, they did something new. And it was inventive. It was badass.
See, that's what I thought about, like, Kylo Ren's lightsaber. And then they shoved it down your throat. It's like, oh, everybody had these.
Yeah. So the other one was Pong Krell, who was a Jedi Master in the Clone Wars, and we saw him in the Clone Wars cartoon.
His was cool. His could fold up and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, both of his. But one thing that I've noticed on both lightsabers is that the hilts, even though Pong Krell's can fold up, and even if we look at episode 9 where we see the dark version of Rey, these lightsabers, the double-bladed lightsabers, they are essentially two lightsabers in one.
Mm-hmm.
So you essentially have, you know, a power source and crystals for one side and power source and crystals for the other, which is why...
That was Darth Maul's. Most double-bladed lightsabers only had one crystal, like most lightsabers. And then when, like, you cut them in half or something, they wouldn't work anymore. But Darth Maul was like, nah, I don't want that to happen. So he got two crystals, bled two different crystals for his kyber crystals, and put them on either side and had individual power cells and individual focusing crystals and crystal chambers for each side. In the event that that would happen, he could still use it.
Right. And that's kind of how Pong Krell's is as well, if you look at them.
Yeah, I think the foldable ones, they kind of have to. Because when you fold it, it's like kinking a hose almost. Some of the Temple Guard's lightsabers did that too. They could fold up.
Yeah.
As we saw in Rebels.
Then, again, you know, the Temple Guards who had the lightsaber pikes. But these were essentially two lightsabers in one. And that, again, that's one of the issues that I have with the Inquisitor's lightsabers, is that there's not enough room in the hilt to have two power sources and to have all the necessary electronics and equipment in order to produce two blades.
Yeah, I mean, the hilt is a little bit longer, but it's essentially as big, if not just a little bit bigger, as a normal single-bladed standard lightsaber. And to fit two crystals, for, like you said, everything that goes into powering it, I don't know. That's just seems a little bit... Not, I just think that would not work if you tried that.
No, and of course, you know, we're talking Star Wars physics here, and we get it. It's all made up and blah, blah, blah. But...
Yeah, it is a cartoon, but at the same time. Just keep it consistent, guys. Come on now. That's all I ask.
Right. So one of the other ones that I like a lot is the lightsaber width.
That one's pretty cool. But, yeah. So, a little fact about Luke Skywalker from the Expanded Universe. He had a red lightsaber Shoto. It's a short lightsaber. To pair with his green one for when he fought... I can't forget her name. I can't remember her name. She used a lightsaber whip, so he used the Shoto to defend himself, to, like, defend himself against the whip and then go in for the attack with his normal one, which was successful.
Huh.
But, yeah, the lightsaber whip is pretty cool. It's very dangerous, though.
Yeah, if you don't wield it right, you can basically cut yourself in half.
That would suck. Imagine getting cut in half. Darth Maul.
Oops.
He lived, though.
Yeah. And then, because we've only got a few minutes left, my favorite odd lightsaber, unique lightsaber of all time is the Darksaber.
Yes, I like the Darksaber. I wouldn't say it's my favorite unique lightsaber, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite lightsaber design. I personally like the Skywalker saber, the Anakin Luke one. Even Luke's green one, I love that design. But the Darksaber's just got some type of thing to it. It's very oriental in its design, and the meaning behind it is so awesome. It also helps that I made one. Also helps that I have one.
Yeah.
It's just a cool design overall. I like it a lot.
For me, the reason why it's my favorite unique lightsaber is...
Because I made you one.
Well, yeah, obviously. But it's truly unique and one of a kind in both Legends and canon for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Just the
you can't find another like it.
No, no. It's not the only lightsaber that has a blade like it does. Because most lightsabers have the round blade.
Yeah,
and some
like
of the
tube-like blade.
Yeah, and then some of the other ancient lightsabers have a blade like you would see on a sword. Those were some of the first lightsabers, like right after the proto lightsaber. And even before, like right after the proto lightsaber, a lot of Sith used that type of blade.
I know what you're talking about. I think it was actual metal blades that they used Sith magic to like, kind of enchant, and it gave that effect of it being a lightsaber.
Okay. Yeah, I think you might be right, because they featured one on the Jedi Knight Jedi Academy video game.
Yeah.
But the Darksaber has such a unique blade to it. Number one, it's black with a white edge on it. Number two, it looks like a sword versus a saber. And the hilt is so unique. It's a square design versus a round design. And it's just one of those blades that when you see... When I first saw it on the Clone Wars cartoon, I was completely enthralled with it. And then we saw it again in Rebels, and then again recently in The Mandalorian.
So something interesting about The Mandalorian one, it still has that flat blade look, but I saw some, like, they did, like, hero shots of it. It's got a round design to it, but it's still flat. It's almost like an oval. It's really hard to describe. They basically rounded off the edges on it. It's still got that flat design to it, but it's rounded off. It's still like you would think a normal Darksaber, but they kind of just gave it a more real-life look to it, because sharp angles and stuff isn't really real life. It's more of a cartoon type of thing. But yeah, I really like it. I like how they kept up with the theme. So like every era of Star Wars, like the prequels, original, and sequels, they all have a different way of attaching the lightsaber to your hip. The prequels was the cover tech knob. It was really just a knob and you clipped it on your belt. Original trilogy, it was the D-ring. You clipped it on like a loop. And then sequels was a almost like a pen clip. You slide it on that way. I like how they updated the Darksaber to have a D-ring on it to fit the original trilogy way of attaching it to your hip. And I think I mentioned it to you when we first watched it. It's like, I wonder if Mando attached that to his hip. And then I went back and looked at it, and it's totally attached to his hip off the D-ring. And it was just one of those things where I was like, you know, I'm kind of cool. I figured he did that. I know they did that. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
Which means I have to make one.
Originally, the Darksaber, because the Darksaber was created in 1032 BBY by the first Mandalorian Jedi, Tar Vizsla.
The only Mandalorian Jedi at that. I don't think there's ever been another one.
I think so. At least none of the canon or even the legends have mentioned one.
I'm sure there's been Force-sensitive Mandalorians, but I don't think any of them have ever joined in, like, Tar Vizsla.
Well, I mean, that was before the Mandalorian War.
Yeah.
I'm back. Alex, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I got kicked off again. Again, we're having internet issues here in the studio. I apologize. Anyway, like I was saying, and I'll make this quick because we are coming down to the last few minutes. Pre Vizsla had a sheath where he could put the hilt attached to his jetpack. That way it kind of blended in with his armor and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons. That's one of the big reasons why I really like the Darksaber, is because it is so unique and it has such a rich heritage and has such a rich storyline behind it. There's a lot of history. There's more history behind the Darksaber than there is the Skywalker saber.
Yeah, it's definitely got a rich history to it.
Yeah. All right, so we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And, you know, because of the connectivity issues that we're having, we are going to go ahead and kind of wrap things up a little bit. We will be having a show. We will be having a note-by-note on Friday. Hopefully these internet issues are figured out by then. And I believe we will be having a movie of the week on Sunday. So stay tuned to the pages to find out. I want to thank Alex, as always, for joining me tonight.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Got to talk about very many topics that interest me.
Yeah. I'm glad. So if you guys haven't really noticed, we kind of retooled how we do the Cinephiles. Normally we would, and I probably should have said this at the beginning, but oh well. You know, normally we would have picked the topic and talked about the topic, but we're kind of trying to redo how the Cinephiles is done. I really like how this episode went. We got to talk about a lot of things that, we usually talk about off air. And a lot of things that both you and I are knowledgeable about. Some areas you more so than me. But I think it was a really good show.
Yeah. It was fun. I liked not having to, like, stress about a topic, and we just got to talk.
Yeah, and I think it made the show go a lot smoother and just kind of had a better groove to it.
Yeah.
So
I'd agree.
So stay tuned for more information on what's going on for the rest of the week. We are having a note by note on Friday. I believe we're going to have a movie of the week on Sunday. I've got to get with my other co-host for Movie of the Week. And then Cinephiles next Wednesday.
Yeah.
All right. And I don't know if Falling from Grace is coming back on Tuesday. Miss Angel's not in the studio with us. She had to leave early. So we will find out. But other than that, I want to thank everybody for all of their support, all of, you know, all of our listeners, all of our followers. We truly appreciate you guys. Support your veterans, fire, police, and EMS. They're out there every day putting their lives on the line for you. Don't judge the 99% by the 1%. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night that we broadcast on Wiki Curiosity Media. Every Sunday night for Movie of the Week. Every Tuesday night for Falling from Grace. Every Wednesday night for The Cinephiles. And every Friday afternoon for Note by Note. I want to wish you all a good rest of the week and enjoy the rest of your Wednesday night.
Sounds good.
All right. Y'all have a good night.
Good night.
Dripping down, it's just you and me. You cut me off and say you're tired of talking. It's not as if we can't agree, but you've lost your will to fight. You're packing up all your things to leave, and these will be our last words. Then the chance will be lost, and I ain't too proud. If you love me, you would hold me. If you love me, you would tell me. You never want me to be alone. If you cared at all, you would stop and never go. But you just turned your back to me and say, I'm